ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, Sarah Kanoski here. I recently sat down for a conversation with the former Prime Minister of New Zealand, Jacinda Ardern. We talked about her upbringing as a good Mormon girl, her unusual path into political leadership, and how she navigated some of the most terrible events in the history of New Zealand.
I felt such rage that part of the way they designed this horrific attack was to try and get people to react violently.
Hear my conversation with Jacinda Ardern now by searching for Conversations on the ABC Listen app.
Coming to you from the lands of the Kulin Nation on ABC Radio National, this is Life Matters. Hello, I'm Beverly Wang. And welcome to the final episode of The Grandparent Trap. Throughout July on Life Matters, we've been unpacking what it means to be a grandparent in 2026 based on your stories. Today, we're throwing a wrap party and you're invited. All you have to do is share a life lesson from your grandparents that you carry with you to this day. Why is it important to you and why has it stuck? If you're a grandparent, you can flip that. What lessons are you trying to impart on your grandchildren? And in 40 minutes' time, the aunties will be here to school us about the pros and cons of engineering friendships. Let's talk. If you've been following The Grandparent Trap this month on Life Matters, you know that we've been exploring grandparenting from so many angles, from what it means to be a full-time carer of your grandkids, to reinvention as a grandparent, and even how to grandparent through family estrangement. All those stories are up on ABC Listen as a resource for you to listen to and share. For our final edition of The Grandparent Trap, let's look inward and think about our own grandparents and the lessons that we've learned from them, either through direct instruction or more likely just from spending time with them, hearing their stories and observing how they've carried themselves through the world. Speaking for myself, growing up, I lived with both sets of grandparents at different times. It was intergenerational living. So four kids, parents, grandparents, all in the one house. And so my primary lesson from my grandparents are culture, language, and history. I speak Taiwanese because I had to speak Taiwanese to them. My Taiwanese identity comes from them. But by far, of those four grandparents, the most influential grandparent in my life was my maternal grandmother, my Amma. She was a staunch, tenacious woman who grew up in Taiwan under Japanese colonial rule. She worked as a teacher for 43 years, raised six kids, and spoke three and a bit languages. If you caught her in the right moment, she would be gentle and joking. But above all, she always came correct. Unprepared was not a word in Amma's vocabulary. Her very high standards and expectations always came across in her presentation. She loved adornment. She always looked sharp. She had a lot of pride. And when I think about her now, I think about her strength. I truly believe if you have a badass grandma in your life, it will light your path forward. This is Life Matters on ABC Radio National, and it is the final installment of The Grandparent Trap, our series that has rolled out all across July, looking at what it means to be a grandparent in 2026. Chat with me, Beverly Wang, and my guests, Tony Birch, a historian, award-winning author of books like Ghost River, The White Girl, and Women and Children, and professor of Australian literature at Melbourne University. But most importantly for today, Tony is a grandparent of four. Hi, Tony.
Hello, how are you?
I'm really well. I'm really glad to be having this chat with you. And also welcome to Professor Tanya Evans, public historian, professor of history at Macquarie University, and chief investigator on the History of Grandparenting in Australia project that covers the years from 1945 to 2025. Tanya, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tony, I'm going to start with you. You have four grandchildren. Can you tell me about them?
Yeah, my oldest grandchild is Isabel, who's about to turn 11. I have Archie, who is 8 on Tuesday. I have Charlie, who is 6. I have Louis, who is 4. So the two eldest siblings and the two youngest siblings. So my two oldest daughters have two children each. So yeah, I have four grandchildren that I'm very close to and have really strong relationships with.
And what do they call you?
Pa.
Yeah. Was that their choice or your choice?
Oh, I don't mind what they call me. They could have called me anything. I mean, my grandson Charlie sometimes calls me Tony and then he laughs like it's some joke he's making. So, no, I'm not sure because they've got you know, various grandparents. I think they were divided up between granddad, grandpa and pa. So to be sure of who they know they're talking about, I'm pa, which I like. It's short and sweet.
Yeah, short and sweet. It's good. And what kind of role do you play in their daily lives? I understand that Wednesdays are a special day for you and your grandkids.
Yeah, so I mean, look, I see them quite a lot, so that two of the grandkids live very close to me, but even my older grandkids. So last Sunday morning, my grandson Archie, who's about to turn 8, I go and watch a lot of their sports. So he's playing football Sunday morning, playing basketball Saturday morning. His big sister Isabel does dance. But other than that, from when Isabel was about a year old, so for about 10 years now, I've always cared for each of the grandchildren in turn for one full day a week. It used to be Tuesday, but now Pa's Day is Wednesday. We had a bit of a change up. So each Wednesday, at the moment, I have my youngest grandson, Louis, but I've had all of the others. And it's just been a really remarkable experience for me of not to just see them occasionally or to see them for a couple of hours. Having a grandchild for the whole day, there's a lot of the basics you have to do, like changing them and feeding them. But it's been a relationship that I think has brought us much closer together.
It sounds really wonderful to be so close with them and to build that relationship. And thinking about life lessons, are you trying to pass on any particular life lessons to them, and how do you do it?
Well, I think their parents would think they hope not. So one of my attitudes to being a grandparent is to be childish in a positive way. So I'm a bit hesitant to discipline my grandchildren. I think it's their parents' job. And also that I think that for me, I like to play a lot. I think what they would see in me, if there is a lesson, that I think they understand that we have a very loving relationship and we're very close. Obviously, if there are things that they shouldn't do, I would let them know about it. But a really good example, I suppose, would be my granddaughter Isabel went home and said to her mum one day, I saw Pa talking to a man on the street who was a homeless man. And she was surprised at that, but also I think reflective that my engagement with people on the street who might otherwise be ignored, she saw as something that, yeah, that might give her a sense of the value of people. So if I think I teach my grandchildren, as with my children, a lesson, it's not by giving them a lesson or a statement. It's by what you do. So children are incredibly observant. So your behaviour, your engagement with them, your engagement with other people, I think that's the most fundamental lesson they learn through experience of being.
And when I talked about lessons from grandparents, what came to mind? Did you end up thinking about your own grandparents and their lessons?
Yeah, well, my grandmother, who was, again, my maternal grandmother, a bit like you, we were very close to her, so we lived next door for most of our childhood. She had 8 children and a very, very difficult life, and, yeah, the loss of 3 of her children as adults, which is very difficult to deal with. I think the things with my grandmother, one, she was very strong, very tenacious, as you said, with your grandmother. But I think it's that classic case of a grandparent, their softer side comes out with their grandchildren. So me and my nan were very close. I mean, the two life lessons she taught me, one that I've written about before, is my love of op shops came from my grandmother. So when I was a small child, we would go to an op shop every week, and I had a rule that I could buy one book, I could buy one toy, and I could buy one item of clothing. And even from a young age, I had a sort of what's called a wool fetish. So I would always want to buy woolen vests. So I ended up with this massive supply of secondhand woolen jumpers that my mum would say, enough, you know, he's got enough woolen jumpers and it's summer now. But so we hung out at op shops together. I love the way that she told stories about objects. So that was something that I go with my grandchildren, by the way, every Wednesday to the op shop. So I've inherited that. But I think just generally a woman who had to live a very tough life, a woman who still had remarkable love and care for people, there was a humility about her that I think I've inherited. I hope I've inherited.
And do you see yourself as that bridge between the experience of your nan and then being able to impart that onto your grandchildren?
I do. And again, I think what's interesting, it's not something that is self-conscious. I don't sit down and think about that. But I do think that my experience with my grandchildren and the way we hang out, it's clearly something that I inherited from my nan of, we spend the day out. We don't spend the day at home. We go to the op shop. We go to a cafe. We go to the park. We do a lot of walking. And they were the same activities that I would do with my nan. So we're not the sort of family, or we don't have the sort of relationship where we would sit at home in front of the TV. And in fact, with all of those grandkids, I have a sort of an unwritten rule that if we've had a big day out, they can then watch a bit of telly, but that's not before 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I think it's about knowing that your best activities with your grandkids are to be socially interactive and to play. It's about playing with your grandchildren. My grandson, Louis, I brought him in recently to the Great Hall at the National Gallery, the Leonard French ceiling, and laying on the ground with him, rolling around on the ground with him, and seeing how the other kids and he interact with that artistic space, and then seeing their pa being silly. I think they like to see, I think kids love to see silly grandparents.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. This is Life Matters on ABC Radio National, and this is the final installment of The Grandparent Trap, our series that has rolled out across July, looking at what it means to be a grandparent in 2026. That voice you just heard telling those beautiful stories is the award-winning author Tony Burch, who is known as Pa to his four grandkids. I want to go to Professor Tanya Evans, professor of history at Macquarie University and public historian, who's studying the history of grandparenting in Australia. Tanya, before we get onto your research, can you share some lessons from your grandparents?
Sure. My Austrian step-nana really loved cooking and eating well, and she gave me my first cookbook in my early teens, Delia Smith's Complete Cookery Course, and some fancy Le Creuset pots for my 21st birthday. And this really set me up for a life of loving food and delighting in cooking and providing for food for the people I love. And honestly, to this day, what I love most is really being surrounded by different generations of my family, cooking for and with them, and then eating together. Sunday dinners are really special to me and my family. So I think that's a lesson my nana taught me.
And why research the history of grandparenting in Australia?
Well, firstly, because there is no history of grandparenting in Australia, and they're really crucial, as Tony's been talking about, crucial to many of our lives. We're living at a time when Australian families are increasingly dependent upon the childcare labour provided by grandparents. 56% of parents in Australia rely on grandparental care, and 6 in 10 adults were cared for by their grandparents. And so they're playing a really, really significant economic role in families, but also a really important emotional role. And we think as a team that that's probably neglected in our understanding of the history of grandparents in Australia. And we have to remember, of course, that Australia is a settler colony. And so many migrants like myself are migrated from Britain with my young children. My daughter was just under 2, my son just under 5, 18 years ago. And they haven't enjoyed the kind of grandparental connections that Tony's been able to enjoy with his grandchildren. And so many migrant families in Australia lack that support, lack that emotional connection, but also that economic support as well. So that's important for families to know about so that they can value those relationships. But it's also really important for Australia as a nation and a society to recognise the significance that grandparents play.
And listening to Tony talk about his Wednesdays with his grandchildren, is there anything that resonates in your research or reflects kind of a unique characteristic of Australian grandparenting?
Oh, absolutely. Look, the stories are really diverse. And as a team, we're a large team. We're collecting 100 oral history interviews from Australians across Australia, from diverse cultural groups. So I've got colleagues collecting Greek migrant stories, Vietnamese, Italian. I'm collecting a whole heap of others, Middle Eastern families, queer families. We're collecting all of those stories, and they're teaching us about the diversity of Australian life, the different cultures and customs and rituals that structure our lives, and how important grandparents are in all of those lives, but they play different roles, and those absences are also really significant.
Let's take some calls now. Julie is in New South Wales. Julie, welcome to Life Matters. You're a grandma of 6, and you remember lessons from your nan. What are those lessons?
Yeah, well, they weren't direct lessons. She didn't say to me, you know, you should be like this. I just was around her, and I guess the traits transferred by osmosis, well, at least I hope they did. She was very strong, but very kind. An absolute gem of a human and a wonderful grandmother. Possibly, well, definitely one of the most important people in my life.
Yes. And then when it comes to being a grandparent to six now, how do you feel like you might be transmitting some of those lessons or sharing new lessons of your own?
I hope that I am. I'm definitely, or I attempt to be, kind, understanding, patient, very patient, but also I try to teach them to be strong. For example, my second eldest is a girl, grandchild, and she's had some wobbly times. For example, in sport, a bit of bullying and so on. And I've talked to her about, when things get tough, girls just get tougher. A father plays a huge role in that, but I think she's taken that on because she's largely risen above the difficulties and is also very kind.
That's beautiful to hear, Julie. Thank you so much for sharing. And I'm going to move on to Mark, who's also in New South Wales. Mark, you've got three kids and you're aiming to pass on lessons from your dad because I never got to meet him. What are you teaching them?
Well, both my parents died before my kids were born one was a little baby when my dad died. But a key thing that I'm the youngest of 10, and he wasn't into it straight away, but passed on to his kids, was getting your ticket, getting your qualification. And that's something that I constantly say to my young adult kids, get your ticket. So,
And how many have they gotten their ticket?
Yeah, one's been doing an apprenticeship and one's got a couple of TAFE qualifications. So, yes. They're getting there, yep.
Well done to that. Tony, I saw you nod when Mark said, get your ticket. Are you relating to that?
Well, it's only that it's a lovely old-fashioned statement that people mightn't understand, but certainly I have great sympathy with that. And clearly, the times that we live in, you want to think that your kids and your grandkids can get an education or training that will allow them to be independent and allow them to enjoy what they do in their adult life, of course.
Yeah, Mark and Tony, maybe I'll throw this one to both of you. Mark, you go first. Like, we live in such a time of, huge technological advancement, a lot of uncertainty. Do you have concerns? What are your concerns for their futures in terms of being able to, find their way?
It is a concern. There's been talk on the ABC about how valid will university education be in the future. There's been some small discussion of that. But to me, getting your qualification, your ticket, as their pop would say, shows that you stick at something and you're able to complete it. Mm. Whether you use that qualification for the rest of your life or as a stepping stone to something else. The dynamic employment scenario is common now where people move careers, but at least it shows that they've stuck at something and got their ticket to wave around, to open a door to go on a ride of life.
Thank you so much, Mark. Tony, what about you? When you think about your four grandchildren and the futures that they face, what are you hoping to teach them or help them find out how they will go?
Well, I'm very anxious, actually, and I take Mark's point about education and training. That's important. But I think that when I look at the state of the world, and I've worked a lot in issues of climate change and climate justice, we face really difficult futures, very challenging futures in regard to how we're going to survive and care for the planet. And I think for young people, that's going to be a major challenge that we've never experienced to that extent. And I think the interesting thing here as a grandparent is that I may not have much input into how that's going to pan out, but it is about how do I equip my grandchildren or help to equip them emotionally, intellectually and philosophical to deal with a challenging world. And one of the lessons that I can impart on them is the whole idea of care. So when we think about the challenges that we'll face as a community and a nation in future in regard to climate is that, communities will need to care, look for each other, to look after each other and to share. And if you can impart those qualities within your family and your immediate community, you just hope that, that your grandkids learn from that and that can be part of their life going forward to meet that really difficult challenge.
Tanya, how much does concern for the future come up in your interviews with Australian grandparents?
All the time, and they're repeating many of the sentiments already articulated. For them, you know, the lessons about kindness, being caring, compassionate, treating people, animals and the world with respect are front and centre of how they are role modelling the way they want their grandchildren to be in the world. So they're incredibly important. But also the stories that they share about their families and their own lives enable children to better understand themselves and the world in which they live, and what those stories about family life in the past do for children is to enable them how to imagine themselves in the future. It gives them possibilities for their own lives. You know, they might be deciding what kind of person they want to be and what kind of positive mark to make on the world. And some grandparents are really thinking carefully and, you know, really sensitively about how to impart and make clear those lessons.
Go ahead, Tony.
I agree with everything that's been said, but when we think about both stories and behaviours of our grandparents in the past, what I would have to say is that the men in my life, the previous generations of men, have sometimes not been good men. So I have a grandfather who's an awful man, a really terrible man, and I knew him till I was about 16. The stories that my father tells about that life is a shocking life and a shocking experience with his own father. So it might seem odd. I've learned so much from that of how to be a good father and a good grandfather because, to be, you know, quite direct about it, one of my thoughts growing up, I don't want to be like this person. I don't want to have relationships with my siblings as this person imparted on his son. And I would hate the thought that my grandchildren would see me as that sort of person. So it impacts on my emotional interaction with my grandkids, my, you know, to be soft with them, to be caring with them, that not wanting to be a man who, you know, you imagine your grandchildren fearing you or not liking you. I want to be loved by my grandkids. So I grew up in families where we were really scared of the men in our life, our fathers and our grandfathers, and that's a terrible way to grow up. So part of my learning of the past is not to repeat those mistakes.
Yeah. Absolutely. Let's go to Heidi in Nara, Melbourne. Heidi, your grandfather lived with you growing up, so I imagine you got a lot of lessons. What was that like?
Yeah, I really loved him so much. We migrated from England as a family and we bought a house with a granny flat. And so he moved into the granny flat and converted his laundry into a dark room. And I would hang out with him and develop photos of his life. And he was such an adventurer. He went... because he was a war veteran, he managed to create relationships with people all around the world. So we'd be unveiling these images of pyramids in South America. And he just really taught me a lot about history. I would go through his medals all the time. And his life, he was just, I called him Dad. I just loved him so much.
That's a beautiful recollection, Heidi. How do you think he's influenced how you live or what you do for a living or just how you interact with people?
Well, I think he really opened my world to history and also just the love of an older, gorgeous man. I think it was really he was strong too, and he was of his era. So he was tough. He gave us tough love as well. But I think just that more world, just in, you know, infusing that worldliness was really special. And the sense of adventure, which I really followed through in my life in lots of ways.
Thank you so much for sharing, Heidi. This is Life Matters on ABC Radio National. I'm Beverly Wang. I'm speaking with Tony Burch, award-winning author, and also Pa to Four, as well as Tanya Evans, a public historian who is investigating the history of grandparenting in Australia. Patricia in Victoria, welcome to Life Matters. You're 86 now, and you remember a lesson, a very important lesson from your grandfather. What was it?
Well, when we visited up from Louisiana to Virginia for the entire summer, we stayed with my grandfather and grandmother. And my grandmother would never allow my grandfather to smoke his pipe anywhere but in his library. And that's where I would go with him, being wreathed in tobacco smoke while he taught me how to read.
And what was he teaching you from? What kind of books?
Classics.
Okay.
The classics.
What kind of classics? Like Odyssey, like the Odyssey kind of classic, or?
Yes, those. And also Ivanhoe and the English writers. And I have, when he passed, I inherited his library.
That sounds...
Which I thought, that was wonderful.
That's
and my grandmother was a traveler before World War I. She and her two sisters went to see the world on a freighter. And then she traveled, I think in the 50s, she took the train from Moscow to Beijing. And so travel and reading were those two things I learned from those grandparents.
And do you think that's what led you to travel all the way to Australia?
Well, that was in 1963. My Danish husband and I came from Copenhagen to live in Australia.
And stayed here ever since?
Yes.
Incredible, incredible. Have you got grandkids of your own?
I have one.
Okay. And how are you, what kind of lessons are you teaching her?
Well, she's teaching me more than I'm teaching her.
Yeah, that happens too.
She's traveled more than I have, and her stories are wonderful.
That's wonderful. Patricia, thank you so much for sharing. Tony, I'm sure that the education doesn't go one way with your grandkids. What do you learn from them?
I think it's about not being too serious about yourself. I've got a strong belief, I've always had a strong belief, and this comes out in some of my writing, that children up to adolescence have such a vivid imagination, and unfortunately sometimes we can sort of knock that out a little bit. So I love their humour, I love their way of, their little understanding of the world. My grandson Charlie, who is, I should say this, Charlie and Louis are technically Englishmen. They were born in London and came to Australia when they were little babies. And Charlie still dresses like a young Englishman, like the landed gentry in primary school, in first year in primary. He has a beautiful check coat.
Does he love woolen vests?
Sorry?
Does he love woolen vests?
Oh, yes, he does. They love wool. But what I've learned from his great affection, where he wrote me a letter from school 2 weeks ago because I attended the family day, and he wrote this beautiful letter of how much he loved me. And it's, you just think, okay, the work I'm doing with him is, it matters. The only thing he did was he didn't know my address, so he sent it to his address and then asked me for weeks, have you got that letter? But it was in his letterbox. But I think what I learn is reciprocity.
Yeah.
And in other words, that the love you give your grandchildren is returned. So it's like a... it's like a transference of energy. You put a lot of effort into to caring for them. They give that energy back. So you feel at the end of my big Wednesday, I feel very satisfied that what I've done has been returned. So what I've learned from my grandchildren is the concept of generosity, of shared generosity.
Tanya, what are the ways in which grandparenting has changed over the last generations? Your research is 1945 to 2025. So much has happened in that period of time. How have changes in the way we live changed grandparenting?
Well, enormously. But I would also like to emphasize that deeper emotional connection. There is definitely grandparents and grandchildren report a real openness and a kind of, they're certainly young people teaching grandparents new languages of gender and sexuality have been really important and reported lots of times by grandparents, which I think is really interesting to see that dual process playing out. But of course, the context of family life has changed enormously since 1945. And, in the news just before this, we hear about the cost of living and housing crisis. And of course, parents are much more dependent upon the childcare labour of grandparents. Some grandparents live very close close to their children. They can help out all the time. Others can't. Some are living together within the same household, sometimes in granny flats, sometimes in shared housing. And while we sometimes think of that as being a particular characteristic of families from some cultural backgrounds, it's increasingly becoming the case from Anglo-Australian families as well. So big changes. Many report about the busyness of modern life, technology playing its part, and also the complexities of families having to negotiate dual income households. So many more women work within the home than they did in the 1950s and 60s, and that's having an important part to play as well.
Let's go to Janice, who's in Nara, Melbourne. Janice, welcome to Life Matters. You decided to be different from your grandparent and parent. Tell me why. What are the sort of lessons that they shared with you that you were like, nah, I don't want to be like that?
My grandmother was abandoned as a child, brought up by nuns. She was emotionally distant, emotionally unavailable. My mother was equally the same. When I had my son and my grandchildren, I decided to curate my own grandparenthood. I wasn't going to pass on the emotional drama. And I have had my grandson, 12 now, and 9, 3 days a week for the last 12 years.
Wow.
And today I'm a sounding board for them when the parents are not available.
I imagine that feels like quite a healing process for you to be able to change that dynamic.
It is. I did find myself. I did find out who I am. The closeness is amazing.
Yes. And I'm sure your grandchildren really appreciate the effort that you've put in there. Do you feel like, what sorts of lessons do you think you have given them through modeling that kind of closeness and emotional availability?
They are kinder, more compassionate. They reflect my actions to them back to me, and I can see that. I haven't told them this story yet, but I have written it in a diary.
Yeah, so interesting. When do you think you might share the story with them?
When they are old enough to understand. Maybe the big one is old enough to understand. The little one, a little bit more explanations, perhaps.
Yeah, a bit more time. Well, Janice, yes. Thank you so much. And it sounds like you've built something really beautiful with your grandchildren. So have a wonderful day. Thank you for sharing.
Thanks.
Let's go on to Claire in Tassie. Claire, you've got 2 grandchildren. How do you think about the lessons that you wish to pass to them?
I can't see any way in which my grandchildren and all the other little ones that I think about are not going to have a very tough future. There's so much about climate change and it's been spoken about. So I think about a couple of things. I think about how it can be that they can have a good life even in hard times, because humans have always had hard times and many people have found ways to have a good life even in hard times. So I think about care and connection and creativity and valuing simple things, lots of those things. And then I guess the other things I think about modelling, taking action in my own life. So I want my grandchildren to know that I did everything I could in my power to try and help them to have a safer future. So I'm pretty politically active, and they know that and they see that. And actually I've seen signs of that in them, which is pretty encouraging.
That's really great to hear, Claire. And your concerns obviously shared by lots of grandparents. Tony, what do you have to say about that?
Well, I think it's a wonderful point. So I've just finished by saying this, that my grandmother, she was a child, an Aboriginal girl, abandoned in Tasmania as a child. And she had a very, very tough life. And I'm reasonably secure now. I'm very secure, actually. We had nothing when we were kids living in Fitzroy. We were very, very poor. And I think that, as the caller just said, the future is going to be a difficult challenge. But in fact, love and care are much more important than the material value. So I learned that from my grandmother, to stick at it and to deal with tough times with love.
Tanya, I want to ask you, I mean, we are expressing our experience of the now and our anxieties for the future. But looking back, have grandparents always felt like, oh, what future are my grandchildren going to have and have concern for that? Or has it actually gotten more acute?
Now, of course, I mean, during times of war, the Depression, absolutely, the times were tough. And I think that their example and living through that does give grandchildren hope for their own futures, as it recognises that people can live through really, really tough times and realise they're not powerless in that process. They have a part to play and they're authors of their own lives. And I think that's really important to keep in mind, especially at the moment when things can seem particularly tough.
This is Life Matters on ABC Radio National. We've got a few more minutes to take your lessons from your grandparents or the lessons that you want to share as a grandparent. Let's go to Stephen in Canberra, Ngunnawal country. Stephen, your grandmother is in all of your very early memories. What are the lessons that stick out to you?
Yeah, thank you. Very much the balance, striking a balance between sort of playfulness and seeing the sort of lighter side in life, but also very much being responsible and loyal to family and friends. It's a striking sort of a balance and in life that I've tried to achieve as well. And I guess as a father and uncle as well as relative to cousins and just more distant relations, I've really tried to sort of to make sure I'm sort of a part of their lives. Like my grandmother very much was in mine, and to make an effort to reach out and in the ways grandma and I would write. That was the days when we'd write to each other by mail, and obviously that's.
Has listening to people's stories about their grandparents or thinking about your own grandparents made you a bit emotional this morning, Stephen? Is it raising anything for you?
Yeah, most definitely.
And
I think probably. Just the unconditional love from my grandma has very much stayed with me. And, that's something that, I look for. I hope to also convey for my family and friends.
Thanks so much, Stephen, for sharing. I want to share another text from somebody who's texted in. I don't teach my grandson life lessons. I teach him superpowers, all caps. At 9 years old, he's very receptive to receiving a new superpower from me. I aim to pass on all superpowers by age 14 before he becomes a difficult teenager. If you want to share any of those superpowers with us, feel free to pass them on via text, and I'm happily absorb those superpowers as well. Let's take another call. Gwilym is standing by in Lismore. Welcome to Life Matters, Gwilym. What's the lesson your grandfather taught you while mowing the lawn?
I used to mow his lawns, and I went there and one day, and I remember saying to him, "What about war?" And because somehow I'd got this thing, because my mum was a pacifist, I'd got this thing from him, and he just said, "I wouldn't want to kill anyone."
Yeah.
And that has stayed with me.
Do you think that's...
My whole life.
Yeah. And what's the
really? It's a really strong thing. Well, because I became an activist against war myself, and my mum went to jail for telling people not to go to war. And this is war is a terrible thing. We're ecocide is committed, and it all adds to the climate change issues that we face.
Yeah.
And I have five grandchildren, and I talk to them about what's really important.
Go ahead.
And my eldest granddaughter, she had a love-hate relationship with when we were growing up, and then she grew up, and now she just walks around and says, "I love you, Granddad."
That's beautiful, Gwilym. Thank you so much for sharing that and some powerful lessons there shared from one generation to the next. I'm going to be cheeky. I'm going to get Leah in from the Gold Coast very quickly. We've got just a minute left, Leah. But your grandma to eight grandchildren. Tell me what, and you also had a grandmother who was a great storyteller. What did she teach you?
Yes. She taught us all to be thrifty. So she came from Greece before World War II. And, my grandfather, in those days, Greeks didn't tend to intermarry. So he went back to Greece to get a wife and brought her out here. And they had a country cafe in a town called Baraba in New South Wales. And she taught us all to be very thrifty. and she'd always talk about Economia. So we ended up nicknaming her Connie, short for Economia. And she lived until she was 94, and we felt very blessed to have her. Another lesson she taught us was she was very selective with who you hung out with.
Yeah.
So if we had a friend that she didn't like, she'd tell us, I don't like that friend, don't hang out with that girl.
Thrifty, to the point. Very to the point.
She was to the point. But we were very blessed to have her because my parents had no grandparents at all. They never knew their grandparents because of migration.
That's a very common story. I know. Yeah. When you say thrifty grandparents, Leah, I think about a lot of those thrifty hacks that my grandparents did that I used to like be, oh, no. And now I find myself repeating them. Tony, do you ever look like
you?
No,
I'm listening. I appreciate those life lessons, but my daughters always say, Dad, what you spoil them. And I say, yeah, that's my job. I'm unfortunately the opposite. I spoil my grandkids and I'd always get them to hang out with the other bad kids. So I'm a bad influence. I'm a bad role model.
It's been a really lovely conversation. And I want to thank everyone for calling in and sharing your memories, your lessons. It's been really great to hear them. And I also especially want to thank my guests this morning, Tony Birch, historian, award-winning author of books like Ghost River, The White Girl, and Women and Children. You should check them out. He's a professor of literature at Melbourne University and grandparent or pa to Isabel, Archie, Charlie, and Louie. Happy birthday, 8th birthday coming up. And also to Professor Tanya Evans, a public historian. She is conducting a history on the history of grandparenting, a research project on the history of grandparenting in Australia from the years 1945 to 2025. And if you want to listen back to any of the previous episodes of The Grandparent Trap, you can head to ABC Listen. And if you scroll down the app, you will actually see a title that says The Grandparent Trap. All the stories are there. Don't forget to follow Life Matters while you're there. Next up, we're moving on to the aunties, and they're weighing in on whether it's okay to engineer your kids' friendship group.
Saturday morning, my favourite.
And Sunday morning, my allocated shift.
On Saturday Extra, we dig into the big national and international stories.
He asks the questions.
And occasionally gets answers.
And then on Sunday Extra, we step back with smart analysis, big conversations, and a wider view of Australia and the world.
Think probing chit-chat.
Think reflection.
Breaking things down.
Without breaking your weekend mood.
Saturday Extra with me, Nick Bryan.
And Sunday Extra with me, Julian Morrow.
From 7 a.m. on ABC Radio National.
And ABC Listen.
What do you do when you love your kids' friends but are not a fan of their parents? You write to lifematters@abc.net.au to ask Auntie. Welcome to your aunties. Director of the Blue Mountains Writers Festival, Maeve Marsden, and journalist, producer, and Radio National Breakfast's dad in residence, Joe Sullivan. Hello, Maeve. Hello, Joe.
Hello.
Hi, Maeve.
Maeve, I'm going to start with you. How important is it to you to be friends with the parents of your kids' friends?
I think there's a distinction between like friends and getting on okay. Like I don't need my kids' friends to be my best friends, but it's nice if you can have a conversation while you're standing for hours in the park watching them play together.
Joe, what about you?
I am on the exact same page. If you can get along, fantastic.
And if you can't?
You find ways to deal with it.
That's right. Okay. So you are perfectly positioned to help Taylor, who's writing in. Taylor says, my son's in kinder and to my delight has made some friends he seems to really like. Unfortunately, I can't say the same when it comes to the connections between myself and their parents. One of the dads spends every playdate mansplaining to me about parenting, relationships, everything else. One of the moms is incredibly rude and judgmental. Trying to make conversation with another one of the dads for the 2 to 3 hours to our place together is like pulling teeth. Okay, so Taylor has not really won the lottery here in terms of parents of the kids' friends. Maeve, what's your reaction to Taylor's situation?
Oh, it's borderline, isn't it? Because it's like, I think if the parents are just annoying or a bit dull, I would say suck it up. But when we're talking about rude or judgmental or arguably misogynistic behaviour, I think then you sort of go, well, how much do I want to massage this social situation into one that sets a good example of behavior for the kid, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm talking.
Joe, what about you? What's going on for you when you hear these descriptions?
The age here is tricky. Kinder. kinder. So we're talking preschool. This is tricky. And I think this is one of those ones where the general rule of thumb is that they're not quite old enough that you can sort of deposit at their house and walk off and go do your own thing for an hour or two or whatever it may be. You're not quite in that zone yet. Kinder is one of those ones where I think you do need to just, like Maeve was saying, sort of just massage this a little bit and feign, because you've got to remember, consciously or unconsciously, kids are learning from you and how you interact with other people here.
Yeah.
So this is a really, really tricky age. And I think this is one where you do have to massage it a bit.
Yeah. So let's talk about that, because in kinder, it's a tricky age. There is an age where hanging out with the other parent during the play date might be expected. Mm. But after a certain age, there is no obligation to linger. You can drop and dash. Joe, what's that cutoff for you?
I think the earliest I did this would have been year one, I reckon. So about at six. And I did ask as well. I said, look, is it okay? I've got a couple of errands I really need to do. Is it all right if I drop and dash? And the other person, yeah, no problem, easy as. But that was also in a situation where I felt comfortable to be able to do that and comfortable enough to ask. So I was very forward with that. So I think that's probably the age that you're doing once the social circles at school have started to form a little bit. I reckon that's where you draw the line.
What about you, Maeve? What do you think about the acceptable age for dropping and dashing at a play date?
I mean, I've got a 5-year-old, so we're still staying put. But I think the hard thing is I'd be more likely to stay if I don't like the parents, because I want to be across what's happening.
More like likely really to stay. Interesting.
Yeah, because if I really trust the parents and I think they're good people who are going to care well for my child, then I would be up for leaving them behind. But if I think the parents have behavior that's problematic, then I'm more likely to want to stay to be able to support my kid if the parents are awful in front of them.
Right. And would you ever think, oh, these parents are terrible, I got to switch friends for my kid, Maeve?
Well, you can't force your kid to switch friends. I mean, I think that there's an age where you realize your child is their whole own person. For me, it was when I bought tickets to take my kid to Monster Trucks, and all my friends were like, "You're going where?" And I said, "Well, I've got a kid. They're not like me. They're not a little theater kid. They're into vehicles. I'm going to take them to Monster Trucks." And so I think you have to accept your kids for who they are and support their interests and the people that they care about.
Just quickly, Joe, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I would agree with that premise that it's really hard as a parent, when you look at your kids and you look at where things are going and you're like, I would love it if they just turned left a little bit. But you've got to understand that they're their own little person.
Okay, well, let's hold those thoughts, gang, because let's see if Taylor tries to go a left turn or not, okay? This is what Taylor says. Meanwhile, there's another little friend gang in my son's grade whose parents seem super cool and who hang out a lot. Their kids also seem lovely. My kid doesn't seem to naturally want to play with them, but I'm throwing a barbecue at our place and I'd love to invite these parents rather than the parents of his friends. I know it wouldn't be his top choice, and when I mentioned it to him, he seemed disappointed and a little anxious. But I feel like once they hang out, they'll probably get along. Joe, what are you hearing when Taylor has so many optimistic thoughts?
It's all for the greater good, isn't it? It's all for the greater good. No, look, I think that there's a key word in there which I've hung on to, and it's anxious.
Yeah.
As a parent, you've identified that this is making your kid anxious. There may be a very, very good reason why, and I think you need to understand that reason why before you take this a little bit further. I think it's a bit of a red flag, actually.
Maeve, what's going on for you here? What's going on for Taylor here? What's your take on Taylor's motivations?
Oh, look, I understand trying to gently massage. Again, we come up with this word, massage. You know, taking the kid and putting them next to the other kids. But to me, I'm just like, either you're having a barbecue for your friends and you just say to your kid, hey, parents have friends too. This is who we're inviting over. Or you're having a barbecue that's centered around the kids' play, in which case the kids should get to weigh in on who gets to come. I think trying to do this slightly manipulative middle ground is a bit strange. And I think if you're having a barbecue for families from the schools, you could invite all of them. And maybe then the insufferable parents from the first part of the letter would have to kind of join in with the nicer parents. But I think it's a bit mean to your kid to invite the kids they don't like and not the ones they do.
Well, just to stick with you for a second, Maeve, I guess I'm wondering about the cool factor for the parents, why that matters so much to Taylor.
The cool factor?
Yeah, saying these parents are cooler.
Yeah, look, I mean, I guess it depends on what you mean by cooler. It could just mean that the parents are much more interesting.
Okay.
Like if I say someone's cool, I mean that they're interesting to have a conversation with and that they're smart and funny. So my hope is that she's not judging the coolness of some kinder kids and their parents. But I understand wanting interest, you know, social connection and interesting social times. And I think it's good for kids to know that their parents have interests too, and that their parents have their own social connections that they have to sometimes participate in.
Yeah.
But this just feels a bit underhanded and manipulative.
Okay. Let's go to part three. Let's check in with Taylor again and see how she's thinking this through. Taylor says, I'm still doing regular play dates with his friends and their parents, but I feel like it'd be good for him to spread his wings and try out some kids from this other crew. And it would be nice for us, for both of us, to have a bit of a gang. Also, is it so bad if on this occasion I'm thinking of myself as well as him? Joe, what is your answer to that question?
Oh, this is such a little conundrum wrapped up in a little
enigma.
Yeah, yeah, it's tricky. I think in this instance, I just referring back to the previous letter, part of the letter, is there an existing relationship here? Are they trying to manufacture something, or is there an existing connection? And what's the reason for the barbecue? Because I feel like, if the reason is, hey, it's my birthday and I want to invite people over, you're more than entitled. But if it's your son's birthday and now you're trying to engineer something, that's probably where we're a bit, right, at cross purposes. And so I think that sort of answers that final part there. Is it so bad to think of myself in this sort of situation? Well, I think it depends on the occasion.
The context is really important, yeah, right? And then, like you said before, reading the child's anxiety. Okay, just to stick with you, Joe, for a second to get your final thoughts. How, if Taylor's here, Taylor's listening in, what is your final advice to how Taylor should handle this situation? She clearly has two interests at heart here. She's got to manage them both. What do you want her to do? What's the best outcome here?
If you're putting the needs of the child first, which I suspect that most of this letter is aimed at, then and you've talked to your child about this, I think you've got to take their feedback on board in that situation. However, my little get out of jail clause is, if this is an event that is for you, you're at the center of this and you've got an existing connection, go for it.
So have two barbecues maybe.
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? Barbecues are great. Especially, you know, winter, get the fire going. Happy days.
Very cozy. What about you, Mae? What's your solution for Taylor?
Have one barbecue and invite everyone.
Okay.
Either they'll all clash and it'll be entertaining and you'll have excellent gossip afterwards, or you may find that everybody gets on and you've got the gang that you want.
Okay. So in conclusion, barbecue is definitely on the cards.
I mean, who doesn't love a barbecue?
Right. Well, the cleanup of the grill can be a bit tough, but, you know, we can outsource that. Taylor, hope that this has been helpful to you. And yeah, I think that I agree with Joe that if you sense a bit of anxiety from your kid, you should probably take that as a cue as to what you should do next. I want to thank you so much. Joe Sullivan is a journalist and supervising producer on Radio National Breakfast. Maeve Marsden is the director of Varuna, the National Writers' House, and the Blue Mountains Writers' Festival, which takes place between October 30th and November 1st. You can find more information online. Tickets for that festival will go on sale very soon. And if you have a quandary like Taylor that you need the aunties to chime in on, please get in touch. Write to lifematters@abc.net.au. Put Ask Auntie in the subject line. I'd love to hear from you. Again, that email address is lifematters@abc.net.au. And a big thank you to Life Matters producers who bring you all the stories and interviews you hear across the week. They are Jack McDonald, Bronwyn O'Shea, Lucy Sweeney, Beck Zajac, and our acting executive producer is Grace Pashley. The audio engineer is Elise Simons, and you can find all Life Matters episodes on ABC Listen. That includes our series, The Grandparent Trap, about what it looks like to be a grandparent in 2026. All you have to do is head over to ABC Listen. You'll scroll down, you'll see The Grandparent Trap there on one of the titles, or you can also search for Life Matters, tap the heart to follow, and you'll be all set. I'm Beverly Wang. Thank you so much for all of your calls and messages. Let's talk again next week.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.